Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Today, former assistant football coach Mike McQuarrie took the stand in the pretrial hearing in the Penn State child sex abuse case. School officials Tim Curley and Gary Schultz are charged with not responding properly to McQuarrie's allegations and then lying to a grand jury. Michael Sisak is with the Citizen's Voice newspaper in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. He says today McQuarrie stuck with what he says he saw in 2002.
He walked into the locker room, he looked in a mirror, and he saw Jerry Sandusky behind a boy that was between 10 and 12 years old. He was shocked, he was horrified, and then later he testified about who he talked to, including Tim Curley and Gary Schultz.
And he also spoke about what he said to Paterno. This has been a question all along, that he didn't tell Joe Paterno, the coach, what the specific details were. Did he explain why?
He did. He said that he shielded some of the more horrific details from Mr. Paterno out of respect for him. However, he said he made it clear that what he saw was something that could not be tolerated.
Then-President Graham Spanier was also told in 2002 about McQuarrie's accusations of abuse. And as it turns out, this would have been just after a man named Paul McLaughlin says he also called President Spanier and told him he had been sexually abused by a Penn State professor, that he had a taped phone conversation proving it, but that President Spanier told him he wasn't interested. We want to hear Paul McLaughlin's story today. He's in his 40s now. He says starting when he was 11, several men, including then-Penn State professor John Zeisworth, an expert in autism, sexually abused him. Paul won 2 civil suits against Zeisworth, receiving settlements, and in 2005, Zeisworth was charged with child sex abuse, but the evidence, that taped phone call, was not admissible in court, and the charges were dropped. Paul McLaughlin joins us from Phoenix, where he now works as a private investigator. Paul, what were your thoughts when the Sandusky story exploded?
It's hard to say. I was crushed. I was back in panic mode, as I was when I attempted to report Professor Zeisworth's abuse of me. All my fears seemed to be coming true.
That your fears that what?
That other children were being sexually abused. My fears were that had I not reported Zeisworth, that he would continue to abuse children, particularly since he's considered an expert in the field of autism. This, granted, had nothing to do with Zeisworth, at least not to my knowledge. However, it was still similar. I had to ask myself, was Zeisworth a part of this? It just seemed like a trend was beginning to reveal itself. And it really scared me, disgusted me, enraged me. There were numerous feelings I can't explain.
Well, take us through your story. You say you were 11 to 15 at the time. How did you even meet a Penn State professor?
Well, we lived in Bear, Delaware, across the street from us. Another man by the name of Carl Gurka lived in the apartment complexes across the street. The abuse began with him, the grooming process, all that began with him. And then within weeks of the first abuse, Zeisworth came down from Penn State. And within minutes of my meeting him, he began abusing me. From that time, I was taken basically through 4 different states and abused in those different states, to include Penn State, Zeisworth's home, as well as office, and other locations on the Penn State campus.
Well, this sounds horrendous. It sounds like a child sex ring.
That's what's really haunting my sleep now.
Well, you say you repressed this, though, for a couple of decades, and then when it started to come back in 2001, you realized Professor Zeisworth was still teaching at Penn State and set up this taped phone call to him. The New York Times reports of reading the transcript of that phone call in a sheriff's office. And, you know, basically, you pretended that you enjoyed your experiences with the professor, and he seemed to acknowledge abusing you and giving you alcohol.
Yes, he did. Zeisworth was actually very happy to hear from me. What surprises me is that, 20 years or so or whatever had passed, and as soon as he realized who I was, he immediately remembered other children that I believe were abused as well. He mentioned my brother's name, and a lot of pedophiles keep trophies, something of their victim to remember their experience by. He even goes on in the tape to mention a ring that he still possessed that belonged to my brother.
So this is all on the tape, which we can't play. We mentioned you won a civil suit against Professor Neisworth in 2002, and as part of that, you agreed not to release the tape publicly. But it exists. The New York Times has seen the transcript, as we said, in a sheriff's office in Maryland. It's there because that's where Professor Neisworth was actually criminally charged in 2005. This was after a warrant was issued in 2005 for Carl Gerke, your neighbor. He was charged with child sex abuse of you and another boy. You identified John Neisworth and another man who were then also arrested. But the charges were dropped because the evidence, your phone call, was not admissible in court?
That's correct. Maryland enjoys a two-party state, meaning that both parties of the conversation need to be aware that it's being recorded. They don't seem to take into account that child sex abuse in itself is very, very hard to prove. There are very limited options for a victim to prove their abuse. They fail to recognize, such as California does, that if you are attempting to gain evidence of a crime, California allows you to use the tape recorded conversations, even though they are generally a two-party state. Yeah. They allow you to use those conversations as evidence of a crime.
So that's sort of the history of your legal pursuit of Professor Neisworth up to 2005. But let's go back to 2001 when you made that phone call taping, and you also reached out to university officials. Before you reached out to President Spanier, you say that you called, the dean of the College of Education. Now, the New York Times asked David Monk, and he says he doesn't remember having any contact with you, but he does remember hearing from someone from your family and said he did take the charges seriously. Let me read you the quote from the New York Times. "I did take the charges seriously and immediately determined that Mr. Neisworth's Penn State duties did not involve direct contact with children." Your thoughts on that?
One of the primary reasons I recorded the conversation with Neisworth was to prove to Penn State that the abuse had occurred. It was after I made the tapes that I contacted David Monk. They treated it as an extortion attempt. They told me basically that whatever my problems with Neisworth were, they did not involve the college in any attempt to involve the college. They would seek criminal prosecution, civil actions, whatnot.
But what I'm also hearing here, Paul, is an echo of something that we heard in the Jerry Sandusky case. We heard that Jerry Sandusky was told to stay away from children or not bring children on campus. In other words, it sounds as if there's that same kind of thinking. Well, if it's not, you know, if it's not a college students, it's not our issue.
Well, and Mr. Monk emphasizes heavily that I was not a student at Penn State. And I find that very telling in itself, that in a very, very short paragraph statement that he made, he reiterates twice that I was not a student at Penn State, as if I didn't matter because I was not a Penn State student.
Paul McLaughlin, who says he was sexually abused by a Penn State professor when he was a child. As an adult in 2002, he says he tried contacting Penn State officials, including then-President Graham Spanier, even offered a tape-recorded admission from the professor John Neisworth, an autism expert. Paul McLaughlin says he was rebuffed by the school, and he now realizes this was all right around the time of the accusations against football coach Jerry Sandusky. A hearing today is looking into whether school officials covered up those allegations. And Paul, before the break, we were talking about David Monk, head of Penn State School of Education. You say you tried to contact him. He says you didn't, that he read about the accusations against Professor Neisworth in the local press in 2002, at which time, quote, "the university moved to ensure Neisworth's work on this campus did not involve children." Then Dean Monk says they couldn't do more because Professor Neisworth eventually retired from Penn State and later criminal charges against him were dropped. And as we said, that's because your taped phone conversation with him wasn't admissible in court.
He also goes on to generously offer to make resources available to myself to help, and I'll quote, that he'll make resources available available to Mr. McLaughlin to help him heal and recover. What I find curious is that from my contacts back in 2001, early 2002, I have never heard a single word from Penn State, any official from there. Yet he states in other quotes that that they were investigating his activities, that my reports were being investigated by Human Resources and the Office of the Provost. Again, I've never been contacted, asked to provide the copies of the tape or anything like that. In another report, I believe in 2005, by a reporter out of Pittsburgh, he actually went to Niesworth's office in Penn State and took photographs, I believe, of Niesworth's office being surrounded by a fence and swing sets and other playground-type things that children would play on. If he had no contact with children, why in 2005 is he in an office surrounded by a swing set and other childlike activities?
And as you said, his specialty was children with autism. Paul McLaughlin, a couple of questions. You mentioned that the school has not contacted you.
No, they have not.
But we're reading that the Pennsylvania Attorney General, the Education Department, the NCAA, and Penn State's Board of Trustees are all conducting investigations. Louis Free, the FBI director, is leading an independent inquiry. Has anyone contacted you?
No, I have not been contacted since 2002 by anyone having anything to do with the university or any investigation of the university, Sandusky, or Niesworth. Basically, in my opinion, it's all smoke and mirrors. Penn State wants to appear like they are that they are aggressively going after this and wanting to make all these changes. Last week, I sent a letter to the new president of Penn State University, and he has not bothered to contact me.
The new president?
The new president.
Paul
McLaughlin. So basically, this culture is just going on. And since 2002, I have reported in the media my attempts to contact Penn State, specifically my contact to David Monk and to Graham Spanier, yet they haven't done nothing, yet Spanier, Paterno, Schultz, and Curley have been fired for their handling.
Paul McLaughlin, you've won two civil settlements from Professor Niesworth. But the criminal charges that were brought against him were dropped.
Because the tape-recorded admissions were not allowed into court because of Maryland's laws.
But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, what do you say to someone who says, look, you know, the charges were dropped. You don't even have, you know, a right to talk about Professor Niesworth. A court dropped charges against him.
Well, to that I would say, if you've got a problem with it, file charges against me, file a suit against me, whatever it is you want to do, because I'm completely confident in what happened to me and the evidence that I obtained to prove what happened to me. Those that would say that I don't have a right didn't have to live the nightmare that I lived and that I continue to live every single day.
Where is Professor Niesworth?
He's still at Penn State, and I believe he's still dealing with autistic children.
I thought he'd retired.
You know what? They said he was retired for quite some time, but they carefully worded the way they said that he was retired. He is retired from active Penn State duties. However, he still continues to run a distant education learning program and whatnot. He brought in a lot of grants and a lot of awards for Penn State for his research in autism.
Well, we're reminded that Jerry Sandusky was retired as well. Paul McLaughlin, private investigator in Phoenix, Arizona, who says he was sexually abused by a Penn State professor in the 1970s and 80s and tried to tell the school about it but was rebuffed. Paul McLaughlin, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And again, we've heard from Penn State. We will post their full responses to Paul's accusations. They say they've tried to contact Paul to offer counseling but can't reach him, to which Paul replies he hasn't heard from anyone, and if we could get through to him, they could. As to Paul's claim that he also called President Spanier, the school says they can't confirm or deny because Graham Spanier stepped down after the Jerry Sandusky scandal. As to his claim that the new president hasn't responded, Penn State just contacted Here and Now that President Erickson responded to Paul McLaughlin today by U.S. mail. The school also said that Professor Neisworth is fully retired, no longer teaches. When we asked why Neisworth is listed as a professor emeritus on the school's website, Penn State responded that the title was granted after criminal charges were dropped. It's a common title for retired professors. And this recap, today in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, there's a pretrial hearing for two former Penn State officials charged with lying to a grand jury about the Jerry Sandusky case. The former police chief at Penn State says the administrator in charge of the police force did not tell him about the allegation that Sandusky had sexually abused a boy in a locker room. And Mike McQuarrie, who made that charge, said that he did not call police that night because he was sure the act was over. We'll, of course, continue to follow this story.